by the way, in case you're listening and wondering, you know, what that show is. We're a live call-in radio program. The telephone number is 603-283-6160. I don't have the article in front of me for show prep, but at some point in 2020, there was a professional football player, I believe an offensive lineman. His name is Russell Okung, O-K-U-N-G. He somehow got the orange pill. He got the Bitcoin vibe.
Based.
And so he was up for a free agent contract, you know, the one where they get paid millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. His contract was something like $13 million guaranteed, and he took half of it in Bitcoin.
Bet he's sitting pretty now.
I think I remember that. It was the guy who got in trouble for Deflategate.
Yes. So he was with, like, the Seahawks and, like, the Jacksonville Jaguars and a couple different...
I thought it was the Patriots.
The Broncos, a couple different NFL teams. He's sort of, you know, hoard around, if you will, amongst the NFL teams. But I read an article today that, like, if you just take half of that, $6.5 million... in 2020 and figure out what it was worth now, like, it's a lot.
Yeah, I hope he didn't have lettuce hands.
It's like it's like way more than his entire best
net worth,
free agent
probably.
Contract.
Yeah,
like if he just kept it and sat on it, right?
Yeah,
no one knows, and he's not coming forward and going like, "Yeah, I have this much left, or yeah. I spent this more, or whatever."
Come after me, U.S. government.
Right. Yeah, he's not asking for any, but like, if you just do the math, you're like, man, that guy did himself a solid.
Mm-hmm.
If he kept it.
Well,
anyone who gets Bitcoin basically at any point is doing themselves a solid.
Yeah, that's
if
true.
If they keep it.
We should all be like Michael Saylor and always be buying the top.
Yeah,
You're not wrong.
I've got a friend of mine, a good friend of mine. He's a former roadie. He used to, you know, help us load gear in and out and, you know, man the merch table and, you know, all that fun stuff. And we'd give him our free drink tickets, you know, and get him into the shows for free, that kind of thing. And I have been trying to enrich this guy's life, like, for a decade or something, right? And every time I do, like, either he gets into it and then gets out, and, like, it turns out I finally called him out. I'm like, dude, you are just the most impatient FCC-er that I've, you know, been friends with. He's like, yeah, you got me on that one. I am pretty impatient when it comes to money and stuff like that, which is surprising because he collects like comic books and action figures and trades and, you know, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect for somebody of that demeanor.
Right.
But because it's an intangible, he can't hold it. He can't see it. He can't put it on his shelf and display it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He can't show it off to his friends.
Well, I mean, and collectibles are a lot less liquid. Like, it's a lot harder to turn a collectible into money than it is to turn Bitcoin into fiat.
This guy does it. He routinely will buy something, sit on it a couple of years, turn around and sell it for, you know, profit.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, well, I paid $20 for this thing. Somebody's offered me $100. Yeah, sure. Here, have it.
Yeah.
Right. Even though you can't go out and buy one for $20 again.
Right.
Now it's just, he always just considers, oh, what did I pay for it? What are they offering me? I can't do any better than that. Yeah. So I'll take that. Right. Sometimes he'll be like, well, only if you also buy this other thing, right? Mm-hmm. He'll package it up with something else. But I just thought, like, this is the type of person, kind of like a silver bug, you know, or a gold bug, like these types of people who collect coins and, you know, they just sort of sit on them for a while.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, they're like, yeah, I guess I'll try and sell some of these.
Yeah. I mean, I don't personally waste my time on people who are only focused and care about cryptocurrency because number go up. Basically, whenever I talk to people about it, I'm always trying to convince them from like a moral perspective and from like a technological perspective. And then when they ask me about, oh, OK, how does Lightning work? How do I actually use crypto in my day to day life? They have a sincere and honest desire to get into the technology.
Yeah, they're coming at it from the right place.
Right, exactly. So then they're a lot more likely to actually keep and use this currency for the long term rather than just treat it like a way to get more dirty war fiat money.
Right.
Well, sure, but that takes time, right? So if you can get somebody to like buy in to something, some cryptocurrency, right, for whatever reasons they might have, whether it's I want to invest for my kid's future, or I want to, you know, enrich my wealth base, or I find this a morally superior technology to regular currencies, or state-based currencies, that kind of a thing. Like, the idea, at least for me with this guy, was, let's get him into something.
Yeah.
And then let me duplicate that so that he and I can, like, sort of go through this journey together.
Yeah.
Right? And then I can explain the things as time goes on.
Yeah.
But, like, no, it's always like, oh, yeah, dude, I totally sold that already.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm spoiled because we're in New Hampshire, but I feel like there's enough people that I know that are on the morality train.
Yeah.
That it's like, I just need to convince them that Bitcoin and crypto are the morally superior technologies, and then that's enough.
Like, I'll bump into people who are like, screw your morals, pal. It's like, okay, what about ethics?
Yeah.
Right, how about principles? Yeah. So do you subscribe to either of those?
Or hell, what about your own damn self-interest? Like, why would you keep something that you know is going to go down in value while you have something that can actually retain its value over time?
Yeah, we are at a point.
Because I'm really, really focused on the short term.
Right.
Yeah, we are at a point where we should introduce ourselves.
Oh.
In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass.
Zephin.
And Pickless Mountaineer.
Segue. We are at a point where the USD, right? This is the Federal Reserve currency, what everybody refers to as dollars, right? The greenbacks in your wallet. We're at a point where holding on to those is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because you aren't.
Did we just arrive at this point?
No, but like. But
well, no, I think it's really important to notice that, like, and I would absolutely say it's when the ETFs got approved. Like, that was the line. And not when the fake tweet came out, but when the real tweet came out. There was always the advice, never put more into Bitcoin than you can afford to lose.
Right.
That does not apply. We are beyond the pale of just put what you can afford to lose.
Yeah, to me, the turning point in the philosophy of, like, how much do you put into it, right? Like, it used to be like, oh, I'll do a 10% dollar cost average. Every time I get a paycheck, I'll, you know, 10% of whatever, you know, my post-tax payday is, right? I'll just put that right away into some cryptocurrency somewhere. For me, the turning point was, of course, all of the money they printed during the supposed COVID outbreak.
So I get that.
Like, oh, my God, they dumped trillions and trillions of dollars into the economy. They shut everybody down. They outlawed art. You couldn't have music. You couldn't have a theater. You couldn't have a play. You couldn't have your kid do a recital. None of that, right? They closed everything down, and then they flooded their own market with more money, devaluing everything that everybody had saved under their mattress, in their closet, in their bank account, whatever it is, to a point where it's ridiculous for you to think you're ever going to save dollars. If I have $5,000 in the bank today, next week it's worth less than it is today.
Yeah. Well, and the right way, I think, to think about this one, and shout out to Guy Swan on putting it this way. So the average person will earn $2 million in their entire life.
Really?
Yeah.
Seems low.
Doesn't it seem low. A little low? But yeah. It's okay. About $2 million. Sure. So when they printed $6 trillion, they wiped out the life's effort of 300 million people.
So
no, they made everyone richer. They printed more money, so now everyone has more money.
And what's the current population of the U.S.?
Well, 330 million.
Thereabouts.
So yeah, they wiped out the entire current generation's choices. Yeah.
And so the thing is that you're actually both right. The ETFs had a big part of it, and also the inflation had a big part of it. I think another thing that has a really big part of it, which will have a huge paradigm shift, is right now people are focused way too much on how much Bitcoin's value is in dollars. So everybody's like, oh, Bitcoin is $70,000 right now or whatever. All you have to do to see the power of Bitcoin is flip it. So see how USD is priced in the amount of Bitcoin.
Right.
And if you look at the past 6 months, the dollar has actually lost around 66% of its value in relation to Bitcoin. It's around that amount.
That's the best way to look at it, because it's the most realistic.
Right.
Yeah. Or look at things like housing as priced in Bitcoin.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's another fun one to look at.
Especially if you can compare that to housing as priced in the dollar, because, man, it is impossible to afford a house with dollars.
And recently, there have actually been a couple of countries like Turkey and Argentina in which their dollar has literally went to zero in respect to Bitcoin price.
Yeah.
Like, so their currency is worthless compared to Bitcoin, literally.
I remember seeing a post on the social media somewhere that said, "Here is one ounce gold coin."
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the creation of the Federal Reserve, you could use this 1 ounce gold coin to buy yourself a really nice suit,
mm-hmm.
a nice 3-piece button up. You know, maybe mm-hmm. take it to the tailor, have it fitted, whatever mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And like then, this is a couple of years ago, so you know, I don't know, 2022 or something, 21. It was like, this same 1 ounce gold coin can still buy you a nice suit. You go to like, you know, a men's warehouse mm-hmm. or, you know, some, you know, whatever your local place that provides suits or whatever. Get yourself something nice for that same one gold coin. Mm-hmm. I saw one recently that it was like, I don't even know what the weight of it was, but it was like one bar of gold. And it was like, you know, in 17 something, this could buy you a really nice house. And then fast forward, like, in 2024, this can still buy you mm-hmm. a house, yeah. right? You know, maybe well, not the, as nice or whatever.
And to bring it all home, an ounce of gold used to be $20.
Yeah. What is it now?
Well,
oh, it's $2,200.
And so there's two ways you can view what you're describing, which is that, like, one, humans have a sort of subjective value of things that is kind of tied with reality over time. So, of course, one suit will always cost the same amount. But another way to look at this is that it's been like 100 years. So the technology and the efficiency to make these things, houses, suits, should have all improved.
Right.
So the fact that these things aren't cheaper just shows you that they've stolen so much that we've basically stagnated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we literally can't begin to calculate how much they've stolen from us because we don't know what prices would have gone down if they hadn't printed so many dollars that their attempt, what they were trying to do was make sure that prices only went up 2%.
Mm-hmm.
They were making sure that prices went up.
No, that's what
no
they told
how,
everybody they were doing.
Well,
it's not what they did.
The official story is to attempt to make it go up by 2%.
Yeah.
Which is still destructive and evil.
Right. So that means, like, on the face of it, like, even if we had a way less evil of a government where they were trying to keep, quote unquote, even prices, like, not go up, not go down. Like, even then, you are stealing from us every human innovation,
mm-hmm.
every technological advance stolen by the government, and then 2% on top of that.
Mm-hmm. I would like to just talk about, you mentioned the phrase, a less evil government. I don't think that's possible. The only way it's possible is if you're starting over and you've like absconded with whatever previous version of government you had, and now you're like trying to start over. You might get mm-hmm. a less evil government at the beginning, but the basis of government is evil.
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually disagree. I think that if the government is operating off of a sound money system, there's an inherent limit to how evil they can be. So they are inherently less evil than a government that is not operating off of a sound money system, just due to the amount of evil that they can actually perpetrate.
Is there a government on planet Earth operating under a sound money system?
Yes, El Salvador.
Well, not anymore.
Outside of El Salvador.
El Salvador is still operating on America's fiat, though.
It is. It's officially the dollar, even though they bought a bunch of BTC.
But you could actually use it in your day-to-day life, and it's legal tender, so.
What about Argentina? Yeah. Or they, did they adopt?
No, they're
Argentina
trying to,
is,
they're
is
trying
currently
to
trying to move to the dollar.
Yeah. The dollar. Okay. Yeah. So
they are attempting to have a less evil system.
Right. Yeah.
Because at least they're not the ones printing it.
Right. That's what I was going to say is like at least a system that they can't control, which does make it kind of inherently sound to a certain extent.
It makes it less evil because at that point, you as the government actively want your people to be more productive
mm-hmm.
because you are gaining all of your power not from printing money, but from gathering their taxes.
Right.
So it's in your best interest all that right. they earn more so mm-hmm. that you can gather more.
So then it may be possible to reduce the quantity of evil in a government, but I don't believe you can have a government that is not evil.
Correct.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's less bad. But not good.
Right. Yeah. It's like minimum security versus maximum security. You're still in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just want to like make it clear because I know that there are going to people out there that listen to this, and they're going to be like, these utopianists, they think that they can get rid of government and like there will just be no evil, when clearly that's not what we're saying. We're just speaking a little nuanced here. But like, at the end of the day, there are no solutions. There are only trade-offs, right? We just all happen to know that the government has the most amount of trade-offs, and that there are better solutions than having a monopoly on violence to deal with our problems.
Well, yeah, it really just comes down to the monopoly thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very simple, and almost everyone gets that monopolies are bad, that monopolies will always, always lead to poor service at high prices. Everyone kind of gets that. What they don't realize is that's all the government is, all it ever can be, is a monopoly on violence.
Right.
And whatever it decides is also part of its job, now it has a monopoly on that. So, like, right now, it has a monopoly on welfare.
Yeah.
It has a monopoly on housing.
Yep.
Has a monopoly on money.
Money, yep.
Which is the absolute worst thing to have a monopoly on.
Yes, it is.
Most important, too, for them.
Yeah.
And in general.
Yeah. And most people realize that you can't allow the government to control things like food, but they don't know why.
Well, and they also have a monopoly on security services.
Right.
With the exception of, like, you know, if you own a business or something, you can still hire like private security to like, you know, patrol your, you know, whatever land your business is on or whatever, that kind of thing. But that private security does not replace or supersede the police force.
Right.
They are only below that.
And they will never have qualified immunity.
Right.
And even in areas where they don't have a monopoly over things, the buck still stops with them. Like, because at the end of the day, all corporations have to ask permission from the government to operate.
Right.
And the government can tell them to stop. And there can be a sort of regulatory capture in which the government is still sort of in control without even having to be in control, which can be worse because it makes the government more efficient. And that's not really a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, basically that's why we're a fascist system and not a communist system.
Right.
Because they do have some of the advantages of having a market, but they control everything.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's go to your calls and thoughts. I believe this is Tim in Florida. Tim, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello, Captain Pequis. Did not catch the third guy's name.
Zephin,
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Pequis, or all three of you, actually, but particularly Pequis, you may realize why in the future. Have you heard of Whitney Webb?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does the Unlimited Hangout podcast.
Awesome. Okay, so she actually talks about Javier Milei a little bit, and she made some comments about him. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but she said basically that his plan to dollarize the peso means that he needs dollars. Argentina needs dollars, and they don't have dollars. So where are they going to get the dollars?
For goods and services.
I actually have an answer to this one.
Oh?
Basically, Argentina is in a process of where they're basically trying to incentivize becoming the new Switzerland. So you can basically bring pallets of cash and deposit them into Argentinian banks, no questions asked, and yeah, they offer good interest rates and stuff. So they're basically trying to create like the private banking system that Switzerland had the monopoly of for hundreds of years. So that's basically their plan to do it, is to incentivize foreign depositors.
Yeah, and one thing that you have to remember is that anyone who has the global reserve currency will always be sending more money away from their country than bringing money into their country. So there's always going to be a trade deficit with anyone who runs the global reserve currency, which is why China explicitly avoids the possibility of ever being the world's reserve currency, because they don't want to destroy their manufacturing base.
Yeah, they'd be screwed.
Right.
Tim?
Well, according to Whitney Webb, and I haven't completely cracked into her, I don't know if it's a theory or something, you know, that's completely based on fact. But according to her, you need investors, and those investors are J.P. Morgan and Deutsche Bank. And I wish I had the notes in front of me.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah, no. So It's not perfect, but it is absolutely the best thing for Argentina now. Because, mm-hmm. like, yeah, don't get me wrong. If we're talking magic wand, big red button here, I would absolutely prefer that their system be based on, like, gold or Bitcoin or something like that. Yeah. But you have to remember that they've been under a kind of socialist reign for a very long time, and a lot of power is still in that ideological camp. So if you moved to completely sound money, you would never get anything passed.
And
they would
immediately
overthrow it.
There are some people actually inching themselves in that direction. We learned that at Liberty Forum today. There was this one talk where there are a lot of devs that are developing technology that create for simple integration with the Lightning Network, similar to what's happening in El Salvador. So there is good work happening there, but I agree. I think it would be a shock to the system if it were like an overnight type thing.
And yeah, this is part of the dirty business of politics that, yeah, it's actually in his favor to have such nightmarish organizations as JP Morgan on your side.
Tim?
Well, I would invite anyone to check out Whitney Webb's work. I wish I had the links in front of me and the exact titles. But where I found out about her was on The Last American Vagabond. And I know that even Glenn Beck, have lost complete respect for Glenn Beck over the last 6 months. But even Glenn Beck even interviewed her once. But The Last American Vagabond, I used to listen to 20 different shows, and I would have to catch up with all of them. I'm down to 2, Free Talk Live. Okay. And
well,
The Last
honored.
American Vagabond.
Nice. Yeah, it's a great show. And yeah, the Unlimited Hangout is the podcast that I know that I'm familiar with of hers. And yeah, just get on the internet and find Whitney Webb, because she seems to be doing some really good journalistic work.
Is that with an H? Whitney?
Yes.
Whitney?
With a
H.
Yes, and she is getting into Argentina deeply. You know.
All right. Well, hey, Tim, thank you so much for the call, man. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening, too. 603-283-6160 is the number if you'd like to join us tonight. Whether you're a Whitney Webb fan or not, give us a call. Your opinions are welcome. It's Free Talk Live.
We'd like to invite you to visit FreeKeen.com. FreeKeen.com features audio, video, and blogs chronicling the transition to a voluntary society. FreeKeen.com also has comments and discussion forums so you can be heard. FreeKeen.com.
Hey, I just noticed we all got the black shirt memo.
Yeah, but his is cooler.
I mean, I'll give him that. For those of you who are not watching our live video stream of this show over at watch.freetalklive.com, Zeffin is wearing a black t-shirt with a large red, we'll call it a rectangle, with white lettering that says Satoshi.
And it's to give a better visualization to maybe Gen Z or millennial people. If anyone's seen the Supreme logo on a shirt, that's what this is inspired by. And you'll never guess where I actually got it. This is just another New Hampshire pill for anyone listening.
Liberty Forum?
I got it at a thrift store
in
New Hampshire. It's like that. That's just the kind of place this is.
You won't find that at thrift stores anywhere else.
You know what else I got with it? There was a shirt that said American Infidel, and it had an AR-15 on it. And then on the back, it said Infidel in Arabic.
Oh, nice.
And so, like, I don't know. I feel like New Hampshire is just the best place on earth. So
we mentioned Liberty Forum. If anybody's listening live and you're anywhere near New Hampshire, Liberty Forum is going on in what city?
Nashua this time. It's usually in Manchester, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, so we have to increase the venue size.
Now, you were there earlier today. Mm-hmm. Were you there yesterday as well?
Yeah, I was. Peakless and I were just here today.
How populous would you say it was? Is it one of the more successful ones?
I think so. Yeah definitely. A lot of awesome people there, like usual. A lot of people that really care about liberty and freedom, and not even just from New Hampshire. There's people that come from all over the country to participate in it. It's almost like a pork fest appetizer is how I like to view it.
Yeah.
Sort of like gets your taste buds renormalized with getting into like big groups with Liberty people. Because in New Hampshire, we're always around Liberty people. Like you just drive around on the highway, you see pork magnets, stuff like that. But like, there's only a couple of times a year where we all get together and have a blast, and Liberty Forum is one of those times.
Yeah, so. And then Pork Fest is the other.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, Liberty Forum, it's a snack, whereas Pork Fest is the meal.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, we're here doing this, so obviously I'm not there for that reason. But I will be at Fork Fest and Pork Fest, of course. What I really enjoy about Liberty Forum, having never been to one, is that it exists.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what I enjoy. And I also, like, people will ping me all the time. Hey, are you going to, like, no, I'm doing the show so that other people can go. Like, Bonnie's out there. I believe Mark Edge is making an appearance out there.
Oh, yeah, he's there.
You know, so, like, there are some Free Talk Live people.
Riley's there.
Gardner Goldsmith, who does our Friday show. It's sort of a version of his show that he does weekly, but he does especially a curated show for Friday nights where there's no cussing and, you know, things like that to be broadcast on the Free Talk Live network. So he's there as well.
Yeah. I don't know if Chris is still on, Penguin Chris, but like he was there.
He is a sometimes guest on Free Talk Live. I think he stopped doing his own show for some period of time. I don't know what that is, but certainly you will find an assortment of, you know, hosts, co-hosts, former hosts and co-hosts of Free Talk Live at Liberty Forum for certain. So if you're out there, say hello, stop in.
And use some peace money while you're there, because basically everyone takes it.
Yeah.
There's actually somebody that I got onboarded onto crypto who lives in the Keene area and was somehow a crypto virgin, even though he's lived out here like for a while.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. And he wasn't against it or anything. He just hadn't had the opportunity, which is weird.
I'm not really surprised. Like, there's been a lot of activism in Keene regarding cryptocurrency and also, like, the police state and that kind of thing. But it's usually demonstrative activism and not, like, educational activism, right? There's an occasional event at, like, the Bitcoin Embassy. That's an educational event, that kind of thing in the Keene area. But, like, most of the activism has traditionally been sort of subversive, like, oh, let's cop block, or let's go, you know, video some cops and, you know, make sure that whoever they're pulling over isn't, you know, having their rights violated, stuff like that. Or, hey, let's gather every Sunday at this place, and because they take cryptocurrency and gold and that kind of a thing.
Well, that's what's more impressive to me is, like, in terms of the Keene activism, is the rapid onboarding of vendors in respect to taking crypto and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what this guy was. Like, he was a vendor. So I was shocked, to say the least.
Were you shocked?
I was shocked. One might say I was electrified by the lightning.
All right. Whiplash segue. I don't really have a, you know, creative way to, you know, move from that into this first story, anyway, that I brought in.
I mean, I know we're in New Hampshire, but hopefully everyone was wearing their seatbelts.
It's not required.
I wasn't.
Not required. But, oh, man. About a year ago, I flew to Seattle for a couple of reasons. One, to have a drummer friend of mine do some drum tracks for me on the EP and that kind of a thing, but also to play what used to be an annual poker game that I would host with a bunch of, like, you know, my old bandmates and, you know, friends and all that kind of stuff. So usually around the St. Paddy's Day is when we would have this thing, and it was called the Irish Spring Invitational, right? And so because we hadn't done it in a couple of years, last year it was called the Irish Spring Invitational Revival. So all that to say,
not to be confused with the Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Different revival altogether, yes.
The all only that, revival I know otherwise.
All that to say, this came to my attention via some people in the Seattle area. This is an article from NPR. NPR is not known for their pro-freedom stance.
No.
But I found this interesting because it involves Boeing, the largest manufacturer of aircraft, I think, still.
Also a huge contractor for the war machine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I didn't realize that when I first invested in them. It's the only stock I've ever sold at a loss.
Mm. Did you do that for principled reasons?
I did it for principled reasons. Okay. I never sell anything at a loss.
Okay.
And when it's cryptocurrency, I just never sell in general.
Like, I once upon a time, I threw, I think it was $1,000 at, let's call it a retirement home, right? A place for, you know, because boomers, right? Or, you know, they're getting older. They need places to go.
Right.
Right. Their kids, you know, we don't want to house them. Let's stick them in a home or whatever, right? So I threw some money at one of these things, you know, under the guise of I'm just going to forget about it and wait for it to go up because eventually this thing will get populated or whatever. But I ran into a time in my life where I needed the money, so I sold at a loss.
Yeah.
Right, and I got out. But, like, that was the reason. I didn't get out because of principled reason. Right. I got out because I'm like, I kind of need that cash. Even
yeah,
though I
screw those old people.
I think I got, like, $750 out of it, out of my 1,000. So I took a loss, but, whatever. But, like, that's the only time I've invested in actual stocks of something. Right? Outside of, like, I've had 401ks where, like, they invest in stocks on your behalf. And, like, if you put in $10, your employer matches $10 or whatever it is, right? You know? So, like, those are kind of, but, like, I've never actively participated in stocks except that one time.
Well, I think I'm living proof that if you're a normal person, war does not pay.
Yeah.
So, this from NPR, Boeing whistleblower John Barnett. If you're not familiar with this story, John Barnett raised the alarm over plane quality. He's a bit of a whistleblower.
Oh, yeah, I heard of this.
Yeah, he's found dead.
Yep.
Right now.
Yeah, right before his deposition, right?
Police, this has just got fishy written. Police in Charleston, South Carolina are investigating the death of John Barnett, a former Boeing quality control manager who became a whistleblower when he went public with his concerns about serious safety issues in the company's commercial airplanes. I don't know if you guys know about this, but right now Boeing's kind of under fire for, like, missing bolts in, like, the door on the side of their airplanes and, you know, all these weird, like...
Because if you're high enough in the military-industrial complex, the laws simply do not apply to you.
Well, it's also the case that if diversity becomes your highest value, you tend to sacrifice quality over that.
Barnett's body was found in a vehicle in a Holiday Inn parking lot in Charleston on Saturday. That's a week ago from today, police said. One day earlier, he testified at a deposition related to the string of problems he identified at Boeing's plant where he once helped inspect the 787 Dreamliner aircraft before delivery to customers. So, yeah, he gave a deposition, and then the next day he's found dead in a car at a Holiday Inn.
Wow.
Barnett was in the middle of giving deposition testimony in his whistleblower retaliation case against Boeing when he died. So it wasn't done. It was just the beginning of his deposition, the first day of it. He finished with the first day, and then the next day he was
in my day, we had standards on our assassinations. It was always the day before deposition. This young generation.
I think that this shows that if anyone wants to be a whistleblower in the future, we have the technology and we have the established court norms to just do these things on Zoom.
Yeah.
And you could be in Russia. You could be in Venezuela. Like, you could be anywhere in the world.
Tech exists.
Yeah. You could be anywhere in the world. You could be safe.
I worked for a company. One of the guys on my team was in El Salvador with, like, a team of his own. And he would jump on calls with us in Seattle, you know, at the appropriate time, the Seattle time, whatever the time zone difference is there or whatever. And so not a big deal. Yeah, you're right. The tech exists.
Right.
Your life is important,
especially as a whistleblower. I mean, your life has inherent value on its own, but, I mean, we want you alive as a whistleblower.
Yeah, if you're going to break Omerta, if you're going to go against the mafia that is dominant across the globe especially, then you need to get that on file. You need to release that publicly on the internet so that no one can scrub it.
And in its entirety.
In its entirety.
Yeah, don't do a piecemeal.
Yeah, none of this piecemeal nonsense. You need that information to be out there completely because at that point, there's really not a point in killing you.
Yeah, the deposition should really just be the sugar on top.
Right.
Yeah.
He was in very good spirits and really looking forward to putting this phase of his life behind him and moving on. The South Carolina-based attorneys, these are attorneys for Barnett.
Well, he did move on.
Said in a joint statement, we didn't see any indication he would take his own life. No one can believe it.
Nor should they.
Police officers were sent to the hotel to conduct a welfare check after people were unable to contact Barnett, who had traveled to Charleston to testify in his lawsuit against Boeing. They say his lawsuit, so I have to think this is a suit he brought specifically against Boeing. This wasn't like a class action. This wasn't like him and a bunch of other employees. This specifically.
I wonder what harm he'd allege. It's interesting. Might want to look into that more.
Upon their arrival, officers discovered a male inside of a vehicle suffering from a gunshot wound to the head. Police said in a statement to NPR, he was pronounced deceased at the scene. The office of Charleston County Coroner Bobby Joe O'Neill said that Barnett, who had been living in his home state of Louisiana after retiring from Boeing, died, quote, from what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound, unquote. What appears to be. Charleston police said detectives are actively investigating the case and are awaiting a formal cause of death as they try to determine the circumstances surrounding Barnett's death. Barnett, who spent decades working for Boeing at its plants in Everett, Washington, and North Charleston, South Carolina, had repeatedly alleged that Boeing's manufacturing process and practices had declined, and that rather than improve them, he added, managers had pressured workers to not document potential defects and problems. We are saddened by Mr. Barnett's passing, and our thoughts are with his family and friends, Boeing said. In a statement to NPR, Barnett, age 62, made international headlines in April of 2019 when he and other former Boeing employees spoke to the New York Times about what he called shoddy manufacturing problems at Boeing. Barnett accused the company of adopting a culture that prioritized raw numbers and profits over quality and, by extension, passenger safety. As a quality manager at Boeing, you're the last line of defense before a defect makes it out to the flying public, Barnett told the newspaper. And I haven't seen a plane out of Charleston yet that I'd put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy. That's pretty damning. Yeah.
That is damning.
Like from the guy that you've hired to be sort of like the last line of QA and to double inspect all your processes for safety and all that kind
makes
of stuff.
Makes me wonder why there aren't more planes that crash, quite honestly.
Honestly, I mean, so you've got multiple things going against you, right? Right. I mean, like, okay, so number one, I mean, I don't tend to think first, and I ought to, that Boeing is, the people that make bombs. They are, but I don't immediately think of that. But, okay, so number one, you've got being the protection of being in the military-industrial complex and a major player in the military-industrial complex.
Arguably the biggest one.
Yeah. Number two, you've got a practical monopoly on your field because it is almost impossible to break into the creation of aviation technology. It is just shy of impossible to do that in this country.
Yeah.
And number three, you've just got the same incentive as every other company. When you are printing money, it is this quarter that matters and no other quarter ever matters.
Yeah, that's the problem with the government corporations, right? People are like, corporations suck, right? You hear a bunch of that on the left coast all the time. Corporations are evil. Okay, but like they're also a creation of government.
Yeah.
Right.
Before... government got into this business of wrangling businesses. You had family companies, right? You had like Peekless and Sons or, Zeffin's Family, blah, 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 whatever it is that you had. And like even banks, for that matter, were like very super conservative because they knew
and
that
community
they had
driven.
They knew they had to maintain the trust of the community in order to remain in business. So banks would never, ever like loan out more than 10% of what they could finance, right? You know what I mean? This whole bit of like this zero reserve banking or fractional reserve banking like wasn't even a thought for them. They were like, no, I would be a dumb businessman to do that. But then all of a sudden here comes government going, hey, if you fill out the right pieces of paperwork and pay the right licensing fees, well, we'll give you government protection from these lawsuits. And so everybody goes, yeah. But what it does is it necessarily means that these companies must be worried, as you said, Peakless, about the next quarter's profit or the next year's profit, right? They can't take a step back and go, hey, let's put profit aside for a minute and focus on safety. Like, they can't do that.
Well, and let's look at what a corporation is, right? You have a literally psychopathically motivated legal fiction. That's what this is. If they find out that the CEO is operating for some purpose other than to make money at any cost, then they will lose their position. They will likely be sued. They might go to jail if they put the safety of their customers above getting dollars.
Right. Also, keep in mind why they incorporate in the first place, right? It's to offset liability.
Right.
So clearly you're going to act in the most haphazardly unsafe fashion possible if it gives you more of a profit, because if you're running the company, they can't go after your money. So, like, the more money you can shovel into your own pocket is all the better. And something else that's important to note is that the companies that tend to, or the corporations that tend to be the most successful are the ones that are the best at greasing the palms of government.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's a fact. It's like 100-to-1 returns on lobbying politicians.
Yeah, I just want to say something about the article before you conspiracy theorists get your grubby little hands all over it. So clearly, it's very, very common for people that are in the process of doing depositions to kill themselves, all right? I know this. I'm in the legal field. Every time we try to call someone up for a deposition, we do the first day, and then the next day, poof, dead. Just happens like every other day.
You're being sarcastic.
Of course. Okay, right. This, like, never happens. Like, I mean, nobody kills themselves in the middle of the most important deposition of their lives.
Yeah, nobody
does that.
Nobody starts an extremely risky deposition and then goes, you know, what's more important to me than finishing this is just not living anymore. No one does that.
Yeah. And this is why, like, when I read this, I'm like, something fishy.
Yeah.
Like, this smells like something, like, we see television and movies like mafia type stuff where, like, oh, well, if we just take them out of the picture, they can't testify, right? Mm-hmm. Well, like, if that was the case here, they like missed it by a day.
Right.
I'm just angry that they think that we're this FCC and stupid.
Well, who knows what he didn't finish in his testimony?
That's true.
Maybe they're like, I don't think he actually will do this. I'm pretty sure he's way too scared to, he's deposing.
Yeah, or he started to say something, and they're like, we'll have to continue
this
tomorrow.
Okay, well, we got to take him out before he covers this, this, and this, because he already covered this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a little bit deeper on my conspiracy rabbit hole.
Good thing I already dressed your grubby little hands beforehand.
Indeed. So I think that a lot of the articles coming out about these sort of things are slowly but surely and subtly encouraging people to avoid air travel. I think that they are slowly but surely psychologically manipulating the population to avoid traveling. Because I got to tell you, after this article, I my own self was thinking, geez, you know, I have no reason to trust Boeing at all.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should really avoid taking any unnecessary flights.
And you can tell that all of these airline companies are prioritizing the diversity of the applicants over the quality of their ability to actually be pilots. And that was kind of the thing that was already concerning for a lot of people. But I think a lot of people were like, at least the planes are well built. And now that isn't the case
or
anymore.
Or are they?
Yeah,
or
right.
Are they? So apparently there was an article in the New York Times that he spoke about. And by the time that article appeared, Barnett had already filed a whistleblower complaint against Boeing, saying that his attempts to raise quality and safety problems had been ignored and that he was punished for continuing to flag them. Barnett filed a whistleblower complaint against Boeing in early 2017. His case against the company was heading toward a trial this June, his family said. He was looking forward to having his day in court and hoped that it would force Boeing to change its culture, the family said in a statement shared with NPR by his brother Rodney. The family says Barnett's health declined because of the stresses of taking a stand against his longtime employer, Not to mention the, you know, largest defense contractor, mm-hmm. you know, builder of bombs and, you know, all sorts of military aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to quickly mention that, like, if we had a free market, the company would be thanking him for doing this.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because, like, you're exposing a flaw in your system that could be exploited by your competition. But yeah. like you guys said, who's going to compete against Boeing?
Well, and
they could just make all the mistakes they want. And it's fine.
Certainly it's wouldn't illegal have made news. To compete with Boeing.
Right.
But it certainly wouldn't have made news. Like, if a free market existed, and this guy was an employee of somebody manufacturing aircraft, and he was like, hey, guys, I got some concerns about the process, and, like, I think it's going to affect passenger safety or flight safety, period. Mm-hmm. Right, they'd have been, oh, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, yeah. Let's address that and fix it.
Yeah.
And, like, life would have just went on.
Yeah, thank you for preventing a PR disaster
right.
and the complete destruction of our market share in this industry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're a lifesaver. Thank you. Here's a promotion.
Right, yeah.
And while we're on the topic of a free market and what it would look like, so if I was running a dispute resolution organization, a court system,
yeah.
and it turns out that during an important deposition, the guy disappears.
Default judgment.
Right. Default judgment becomes an option. Or here's one. Boeing is no longer allowed to be a part of my system.
Mm.
So right. it would actually motivate them to protect not to him. Do this.
Well, not to just not do this, but to actively protect him.
Right.
Right, the incentive structure would be corrected.
Right.
Which is something that can't happen under the, I don't know what the right word, the tyranny of government as we know it today.
Right.
Right. Like, there's something to be said, like, as an anarchist, right? People are like, oh, you don't think rules should. It's like, no. I don't think rulers. Right. And rules are fine. I have no problem with rules.
Not only that, it is precisely because I want the rules to apply to everyone.
Right.
I want them to apply to police. I want them to apply to politicians. I want them to apply to soldiers. I want them to apply to doctors.
Yep.
I want them to apply to Fauci.
Yep.
I want everyone to be governed by rules that actually happen.
Well, right. We're not even in a system of law and order. What we're in is a system of anarcho-tyranny.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, that's...
Yeah, the worst parts of anarchy in the sense of chaos and the worst parts of tyranny at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
603-283-6160. What do you know about this whistleblower case against Boeing and Mr. Barnett? Give us a call. Let us know your opinion. More Free Talk Live is coming up. Hour number two is next.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom. It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com. Talk Live.
Yes, welcome back. Thank you for tuning in and listening to tonight's edition of Free Talk Live.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. We're here. What are we doing?
We're talking. Freely.
And
it's live,
and
I think.
Live. Whoa.
Yeah.
Hence the name, Free Talk Live. We have a telephone number if you'd like to join us. It's 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio, it's myself, the captain.
Zephin.
And Pickless Mountaineer.
Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. Dash transactions are irreversible, so Dash is great for merchants. Plus, its network is protected from 51% attacks by its chain locks technology. Thanks to the Dash DAO, that's a decentralized autonomous organization, for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. org.
Could I say something?
I don't know. Can you?
Yeah. I love Dash.
Yeah.
I love Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I love every cryptocurrency, more or less.
Yeah.
The thing that I don't love is when we all attack each other and are like spending all of our time being like, you're the worst because you're not like exactly what I want. Like, I think that we as pioneers of this technology should be focusing on picking our favorites and just getting as many people onboarded as possible. And I love that Dash does such a great job at that. I prefer Lightning. I prefer Bitcoin personally. But I love Dash because it really does prioritize that, like getting people onboarded and using the thing more than most projects do.
Because I've been able to use cryptocurrency after relocating to New Hampshire, where there are merchants who accept it and people who deal in it, and like, you know, communities of people who are like, oh, hey, yeah, we're going to be over here. We're having a market day. And yeah, sure, I'll take Bitcoin for my goods or services.
Yeah.
Like, I've been able to use it. And so one of the great things about that is that, like, I'm not locked into any one specific currency.
Yeah.
Right? If I want to buy something and not have the transaction or have the transaction be as private as possible, and you know, the person I'm trying to transact with or business takes Monero, right? Far out, solid, and right on. I'm going to use Monero because they're the privacy coin, right? Or at least the biggest one. If I don't care, right, then I'll use something else, right? I'll try to use something fast, right? Bitcoin, really, like, it hasn't been very effective at sort of point of sale instant payments.
Oh,
right?
But Lightning is.
But with Lightning, it is. But then there's other currencies, Dash, for example, that are designed to just do that.
Yeah.
Right? So, it depends on the use case. The other thing that I find interesting about cryptocurrency is, so I grew up in the, I don't know, I came up in 80s heavy metal, right? Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, Pantera, stuff like that. Once upon a time, there was just one category of heavy metal, right? It was just heavy metal, and that was it. And, like, bands that were not metal got thrown into the heavy metal category. Boston, Journey, right? Stuff like that. Arena Rock was tossed in from time to time into the metal category.
And that's not only not metal, it's not heavy metal.
Yeah. Sometimes hard rock would get tossed in there too, like
does Guns N' Roses
Foreigner
count
or something. Exactly. Yeah. Like, do they?
I don't know.
To me, they're rock.
Yeah.
But like my heavy metal barometer has always been Black Sabbath.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. So if you're heavier than Sabbath, you're metal. If you're not heavier than Sabbath,
well, do you know where
rock.
The term came from?
Heavy metal.
Yeah.
Enlighten me.
Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix's music was described as carrying heavy chains of metal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And
I would not describe Jimi Hendrix as metal.
No, I thought where it would come from would be that, like, rock is, like, hard, you know, in comparison to what existed before.
Right.
But metal is even harder physically than rocks.
Yeah. Right.
AC/DC, hard rock, right? Black Sabbath, heavy metal, right?
Right.
Like, that was kind of like, you know, the barometers or whatever. Yeah. So the reason I talk about heavy metal in relation to cryptocurrency is that I see something similar happening in cryptocurrency that I have seen over the last 30 years or so.
There's sound currency like gold and there's sounder currency?
Well, no, it's that there's subgenres now.
Ah.
Right? Now, we all know the word cryptocurrency, but within cryptocurrency now, there's subgenre. There's privacy coin. There's spending coin. There's saving coin. There's
Security coin. Which is what Bitcoin is. It prioritizes security.
Stable coin, right? Mm-hmm. Things that are pegged to the dollar so you can move in and out of that value freely without actually converting it into actual dollars, right? Staying within that sort of cryptocurrency realm, right? So there's all these subgenres now, kind of like there is in heavy metal. In heavy metal now, there's like, oh my God, I don't even know, man. Like 170,000 different subgenres, right? And it's kind of like the longer the name of the subgenre of heavy metal you're into, the bigger douchebag you are. It's kind of like the same thing with your coffee order at Starbucks. The longer your coffee order is, the bigger douchebag you are.
Italian baby slaying murder death metal.
Right. Yeah. Like, so
because you have to have murder and death so people know exactly what you're talking about.
So, but this is what I see happening with cryptocurrency. Ironically, the other parallel that I can draw to cryptocurrency, I don't know if it's ironic or not, but is the search engine wars back in the late 90s, early aughts, when, you know, there were so many, everybody was competing to be the search engine du jour. There was Dice and Ask Jeeves and all these other.
I forgot about Ask Jeeves until recently.
Yeah. A dog pile was another one. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this little search engine with just a plain page. Like all the other pages you'd go to search engines, they had a big thing where you could enter your search, but then the rest of it was advertisements, right? And stuff like that. But then Google comes along, and it's just a blank page with just in the middle of the place where you put your search, and you hit go. And they won. They literally won the search engine wars, right? Because they had the cleanest interface. They had the best results, right? And they just literally dominated everybody.
But I can't believe I don't get to feel lucky anymore. What if I'm feeling lucky?
Well, a nice hefty investment from InQtel goes a long way. InQtel, for those who don't know, is admittedly a CIA front for investing in legal businesses.
Right. The turning point for me for the company calling themselves Google now was when they eliminated their motto of don't be evil.
Yeah, I always tell
people they didn't eliminate it. They just took it off the letterhead.
Yeah, that's eliminating it from the letterhead.
It's still their motto.
It's not.
It's just not what they focus on.
You can't go tour the Google HQ and find that anywhere, I'm told.
It's not hopeless, though. Use DuckDuckGo, use Brave, and, you know, don't use evil search engines like Google.
Use pre-search. That one's awesome. Use pre-search, I have found that one to be equally as effective as Google, which is saying something.
No, yeah.
Because that one's tricky for Brave.
No,
for,
yeah, DuckDuckGo, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so pre-search, number one, I have found it to be equally effective.
Yeah.
Number two, it's also blockchain-powered.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And one of the things that's amazing to me is that the search engines are finally doing what we thought they were going to do in the first place because of the AI.
Be accurate?
Well, we thought that they would interpret human speech and then give us what we asked for. Now, that was never what they were capable of, but it's what we thought they were going to do when, like, Ask Jeeves would have it's like, right. Oh, I thought I would ask Jeeeves. And then he would tell me the answer.
Jeeves would be like, oh, this is what you mean. Here, have the answer.
This technology is just useless until we can just type in, what's the name of that song that goes dum-da-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum? And it gives us the exact accurate result, all right?
That's the dum-dum song, don't you know?
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
And you know, since we had like touched on the many flavors of cryptocurrency, you know, similar to the genres of metal, it seems to me that there are like major genres of it. So there's the token that focuses on decentralized computing. Now the most well known of that is Ethereum, but there's like specific tokens that will focus on one aspect or another. Like Render, for example, focuses on the processing power, which is why they're sort of linked to AI because you need a lot of processing power to set up your AI. There's Filecoin, which is set up to the like filing part of it, similar to how Library works.
Yep.
But yeah, all of those are in the genre of decentralized computing purposes. Now there's the currency purpose, which is where you have Dash, Monero, Bitcoin Cash, things like that. Things that you can very quickly and efficiently and for low prices send however much you need to send. And then there's storage, or like store of value. And there is just the absolutely dominant BTC in that genre.
Right.
But these are different purposes. So there's so BTC doesn't compete with anything else as a store of value. And there's a competition for the currency that is different from the competition for the store of value.
Right.
Well, and there's a reason why Bitcoin is the store of value, right? It's because it is the most secure network on the planet.
And, right.
And there is no second place.
It's the eldest of all the cryptocurrencies because it was first, and it has that first
mover advantage.
I guess that's what you want to call it. But
so that one's tricky.
It is the longest tenured cryptocurrency network,
right,
in existence.
But so is Bitcoin Cash, and so is Dash, and so is Litecoin, because these are all forks from the original thing.
Yeah.
Like they are all equally old. They are the same chain. It just went in different directions.
But I think that the attacks by governments, by hackers, by anyone with, you know, a profit motive and a thieving mind, right, have been largely launched against Bitcoin and not the others, including the forks.
Well,
like,
right.
Yes, they've all experienced some sort of attack, but Bitcoin itself, the granddaddy Bitcoin, BTC, has been attacked since I can remember and is being attacked right now as we speak, and it is still secure. Bitcoin itself has never been hacked.
And this is why Bitcoin is the most anti-fragile cryptocurrency, is because what doesn't kill it quite literally makes it stronger.
Right.
And then I think that the really important thing about this is that if the government ever wises up and is like, oh, shoot, cryptocurrency is coming to eat our lunch, I don't think they actually stand a chance against Bitcoin. I think that they do stand a chance against a lot of these weaker chains that, one, just have a smaller market cap, so a lot less computing power behind them. But two, even if the market cap purely transitioned over, there's just way too many security-related issues that come from chains that have big blocks that are like faster on the base layer, but create less of an incentive for somebody to get gigabytes and gigabytes of storage space to run a node. Yeah. Sorry, I hope we're not getting too in the weeds here. The point that I'm trying to make is that Bitcoin prioritizes security, which in a world of governments that have the unlimited ability to print fiat is the most important thing.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I guess that summarizes the point I was trying to make a little bit better than the way I made it. So thank you.
Anytime.
Yeah, one of the criticisms that the really hardcore BTC people will say is like, well, do you even need a blockchain for that? And there are a lot of things that you don't actually need a blockchain for that are being done.
Yeah.
But when it comes to currency, of course, you absolutely need a blockchain for it.
Yeah.
Now, I would also say that, like, next to that and possibly equal to that, I think that when we get to a decentralized court system, you will also equally need the kind of permanent secure record that you need for a store of value for that use purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, the other thing I guess we should probably touch on since we're talking about it is blockchain technology in and of itself is still largely uninvented or unexplored.
Yeah.
It's very young.
Cryptocurrency is sort of the first killer app from that particular invention. But, like, man, that thing can do so much more. It can do so much more. It can literally replace bureaucracies.
I mean, but what I love about cryptocurrency is that it used blockchain technology to solve our most important problem first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the coolest thing about it.
Yeah.
Is that most people don't realize how freaking important the money is. But this is why I think the technology was divinely inspired, is that it addressed this problem first. And I just think that that's so beautiful.
And let's not forget about the why for those of you who are like, okay, I hear you talking about crypto and Bitcoin, but, like, you know, I don't really. Well, why was cryptocurrency invented? Because of 2008, because of the banking collapse, right? Because everybody lost their shorts, not everybody, but, like, a bunch of people.
Unchecked central banker power.
Well, right. And here's crucially important what happened as the response is that you and me and everyone else on Earth, because it's a global reserve currency, bailed out the miscreants. All of these banks that had broken the law, that had taken enormous, unfathomable risks, that had defrauded everyone over and over, didn't fail, didn't end, didn't restart. No one was punished. No, what happened?
I think, like, one guy went to prison, but that's, like, nothing. Yeah.
And if you look into that, he shouldn't have.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was, like, one of the people that shouldn't have ended up in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did happen? We all paid their bill.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We paid for all of the money they lost to stay in business.
We got raped for it.
Yeah.
Right? They took the money from us. We didn't voluntarily give it.
Right.
There was no vote. There was no GoFundMe for, like, hey, everybody, if you really want to help these banks out because they're failing, you know, here's the website you go to donate some money if you want to help them, you know, sort of dig out of this mess. There was none of that. There was no voluntary portion. There was no permission. There was no, what's the word I'm looking for?
Consent.
Thank you. Consent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd like to point out, we already saw what a little sample of what happens when that event occurs in a post-Bitcoin world. We saw that almost precisely 1 year ago today with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature and all of that. And here's the crucial difference. Yes, all of the depositors were made whole, even though they probably shouldn't have, because that's a lot more money than was actually insured by FDIC.
Yeah.
But the stockholders were not made whole this time. The fact that you invested your money in something that you knew was doing terrible, terrible things, but you expected them to be bailed out with printed money, you lost.
Yeah.
That's the difference that it's made so far.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning.
And if you just look at how the Fed has been doing policy in general, the fact that they have Jerome Powell spearheading all of this is because they are worried about the fact that they have some real competition now.
Yeah, the reason they moved from Janet Yellen, our current Treasury Secretary, print it all, give it to me, to private equity Powell, is because they needed to compete with something for the first time in the existence of this system.
Did you hear that recently she actually apologized for saying that inflation was transitory?
Really?
Yeah, this was like a week ago. That, yeah.
I saw something about that where, like, I mean, we never bought that here on Free Talk Live, at least this particular panel. Yeah.
Well, it's because the one thing that isn't transitory is Bitcoin going up over time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and we also know that economically speaking, if you look at the way the United States is handling the fiat currency that it peddles as the U.S. dollar, there's only one way for them to go, and that's more inflation. Mm-hmm. They can't go the other way. It's impossible. Right. They're not going to go the other way. They're not going to lower the interest rates. They're not going to back down on the – they're not going to start scooping up wads of cash and eliminating it from the marketplace. It's just not going to happen.
Well, that's what they're trying to do with increasing the interest rate. Is they're trying to vacuum up all of the money that they injected into the economy.
Yeah.
But the problem is that, like, if you just talk to everyday people, nobody is really getting a mortgage right now.
Right.
Like, so it's not really having its intended effect because people are acting rationally. Yes. Surprise, surprise.
I was reading an email from an organization called Countermarkets, and it talks about how if you currently own property, consider yourself lucky. Mm-hmm. Because no one can afford a house right now, even a starter home.
Mm.
Like, it was.
I know one group that can. Those who save in Bitcoin.
Yep.
Okay. But like outside of that, like it was just 2019 when the average salary per year to afford an average starter home was like $59,000 a year. Like, so if you were a single person or if you were a couple and you made more than $59,000 a year, then you could afford a starter home. Mm-hmm. That has now increased to something like $110,000 per year.
Mm-hmm. So Baruch Hashem, I got in at in 2021, or else I would not be in a home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, I was a single dude. I had one income, right? I made above that particular number at the time, so I was able to get a mortgage, et cetera, and so on. And so I did. If I'd have waited even like a year.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be stuck in an apartment, you know, or living the van life or something.
Yeah. For me, it could have even been 6 months because the interest rate just became so brutal. It went from being the best interest rate, lowest interest rate in American history to arguably one of the highest interest rates in American history. I mean, and that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, we were talking about Boeing and we're talking about land here, and both of these have the same problem because they are being used as a store of value.
Yep.
And when you do that, you screw everything up.
Yeah.
When you do that to housing, you end up with this massive homeless population problem.
Right.
You end up, of course, with a massive drug overdose problem, which has everything to do with the same thing, because this thing that we needed had its price pushed way higher than could possibly be afforded by the economy that produced it.
And then
with Boeing, all of these stocks are way overvalued to the point that no one even, like, there is not even a reasonable comparison to how much money these companies make over time and how much they're valued at. It is all pure speculation in the sense of it doesn't matter how much they make, it matters how much you can sell it for. And that's why you get these kind of miscreants at Boeing.
And Bitcoin fixes this too, because if we have a store of value that the whole point of it is basically to be a store value, something that has a fixed supply that we can rely on over time, instead of putting that into a house, people will just live in houses.
Yeah.
And so there's no counter incentive to restrict building. And then instead of keeping a store of value in stocks as a, you know, to keep that store of value, they'll just invest in the company if they want to invest in a company.
Right. If they think the company is going to actually make the money, not just be sellable later.
Right.
And that's that's actually an important difference.
Exactly.
Because that puts the incentives for the company in providing value for its customers.
603-283-6160 is the number if you'd like to join us. Still to come tonight, a Zephon sermon.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk about the islands of New Honduras, Hampshire. It's Free Talk Live. Stay tuned.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in and listening to tonight's edition of Free Talk Live. We are a live call-in radio program where you could call in, talk about whatever's on your mind. We've been talking about all sorts of stuff. This whistleblower at Boeing found dead the day after the first day of his deposition. Nothing fishy about that at all. We've been talking about cryptocurrencies. We've been talking about government monopolies are a bad thing. We talk about Whitney Webb in Argentina, et cetera, and so on. So feel free to call in. We've got some calls on hold. We'll get to those momentarily. In the studio, it's myself, the captain.
Zephon.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
I was going to ask you how to spell that, but you corrected yourself. Just fine.
It's spelled...
I think I need some more letters in my alphabet.
You just need to use the real alphabet, like Lulu.
Clearly. Before we go on, Free Talk Live, this half hour is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost, and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial site forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. All right, let's go to some of your calls and thoughts, as promised. Let's go to Laura. Laura, where are you calling from today?
South Carolina.
Hey, all right. What's on your mind today? What do you want to talk about?
Just talking about the whistleblower event, I just wanted to remind the listeners that back when Boeing first started opening their manufacturing plant in North Charleston, there was a huge dispute as to whether they would be unionized or not.
Yeah.
And some of those tensions have not resolved even in quite a while. And I just want to throw that in for discussion.
Yeah, you're correct. So having lived in Seattle for 22 years before moving here in 2019, I recall all the hubbub and it was almost like Boeing had a competition to see, you know, where they're going to relocate some of their plants to. And it was indeed South Carolina that won out. And then I do recall, you know, there being at least something in the news about, you know, whether or not they would unionize, because Boeing, to my knowledge, had been completely unionized up until that point. But they wanted to relocate because, well, it was getting too expensive, even though Washington State was giving them plenty of tax incentives to stay there. They were getting a better deal from where they relocated to. So that's what I know on the topic.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is I'm a libertarian, right? So I believe that unions are just like a neutral thing. They're a voluntary association of people. But I don't think that if Boeing was unionized, this would have actually solved anything. It wouldn't have actually prevented this decrease in quality, this this horrible performance on their part. So I think it's interesting that they are able to successfully shut union attempts down. I think that shows that, again, their market share just makes them impossibly formidable.
They are a 500-pound gorilla.
No,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know if this were a unionized company, if anything substantial would be different.
Beagles?
Well, I think that unions are a fantastic thing until the government gets involved.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been an effective way of fighting the fascism of America until they were incorporated into it. And yeah, it's still very much in the interests of Boeing to make sure that there isn't a union that they have to pay well. And since they are so very well integrated with the most violent part of this mafia, they are happy to take out whoever will cut into their profits.
Laura, your thoughts?
Just listening to you guys. It's interesting.
Anything else you want to bring up tonight?
No, sir. That's it. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening, too. Feel free to call us again.
If I could just touch on one more thing about the union. So I just wanted to make an interesting observation that you see Joe Biden going around the country and doing stump speeches with unions of the steel industry and some of these other industries. But weird how he is absent at these union organizers rallying to get some support with Boeing. It's almost like he, for some reason, is a bit friendlier to the military-industrial complex industries than he is to other industries. Yeah, wonder why.
Well, he has always positioned himself to be in the good graces of everyone who is formidable. Tough guys, miners, blue-collar workers, these are the people who he has gone out of his way to appeal to.
Mm-hmm.
Not by actually giving them things that they want, but by sounding really good to them. Mm-hmm. Because he knows what politics are like, and he knows that he's not in the VIP section of the club, so he wants to make sure that he has the most powerful force, like literally force, on his side at all times, which is why he will never say anything against the military-industrial complex. Mm.
Well, you could tell he's really spineless. Like, I always love reminding people that he did this because it's just so funny, but it also shows you a bit about his psyche. Like, when this one guy was criticizing him, and he's like, look, fat, look. Like, let's do some push-ups right now. We'll see who has more of the stamina. Like, literally just calling this guy who's criticizing him fat, like,
right, yeah,
and demeaning him, even though he's supposed to be working for him. You don't demean people you're working
when
for.
When your debate opponent decides to start insulting you, you've won. Whether or not anybody else recognizes that is a whole other story. But like, they're just out of stuff at that point. And so now they're resorting to insults.
And I want that anecdote to be a powerful, powerful anecdote for everyone listening, that some average guy just can slightly press the leader of the free world and he just instantly caves in on himself.
The alleged.
And that was Joe Biden like like 3-4 years ago. So that was like competent Joe Biden.
Yeah.
If you're just an average functioning human, you are more competent than the president of the United States. So be proud of that.
You can climb upstairs.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing that Trump managed to keep both the military-industrial complex and the soldiers that it is sacrificing on his side.
Mm.
So he pulls back some of the troops from Syria, not, you know, the whole thing like he should have, but enough to at least gain a name among the rank and file, while at the same time wildly expanding the drone bombing, for example, so that there are a lot more juicy government contracts for the military-industrial complex like Boeing.
Yeah, well, he also had a plan for a full pullout of Afghanistan, too.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that was not going to be disastrous like Joe Biden. I mean, it's the government. He probably would have found a way to make it mildly disastrous, but it wouldn't be like the absolute S show that...
And I guarantee you he would have gotten the same amount of criticism from the media.
Oh, for sure.
Because they absolutely will not let you reduce the amount of wars without taking flack.
Right. Well, that was the interesting thing about Biden is, like, I think that when he did the pullout, they weren't silent about it. Like, they covered it, but they weren't, like, criticizing him in either direction.
It was literally the first time that I remember hearing any criticism about Joe Biden on the mainstream media.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Like, I remember them just basically covering the people, like, running to the plane and all of that, which I guess is kind of inherently negative coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember it being like, oh, Joe Biden did this disastrously. Like, I don't remember them saying that out loud.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you should have seen what was on Fox News.
Oh, well, I mean, of course, but they do that, like, well, regardless.
They actually hadn't attacked Biden, which was weird, but they had really avoided attacking Biden up until that point.
Oh.
At least that was my memory of it, at any rate.
So let's go to more of your calls and thoughts. I believe this is Olivia calling. Olivia, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello. It's been a minute.
It has. I'm glad to hear from you, of course.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. I took a sabbatical. I haven't checked on Free Talk Live in a while, and I saw Ian went to jail or prison. I was going to see if there's a way to write to him or send him a magazine or something.
Yeah, there is. We expect him to be moved from where he's at. He currently is in Merrimack, which is a New Hampshire facility. It's not a federal prison. So we expect him to be moved to a federal facility, sometime soon. Usually that happens after all of the, you know, the conviction and then the, not his appeal, but he went through a restitution thing where they, you know, raped him for some money or whatever. But like that has all concluded now. So we expect the move to happen,
And we keep all the up-to-date information on thecrypto6.com. So if you want to know how to send him a letter or a magazine, I've sent him some letters in the past. I need to be better at doing it more regularly. But we have some good people that make sure that that website is always up-to-date if there is any sort of change.
I also, just because I knew you were going to ask that, Olivia, I just posted to all of the Free Talk Live social media. There's an article written over at freekeen.com called Writing to Caged Activist Ian Freeman at the Merrimack County Spiritual Retreat. I just posted a link to that, so if you can find our Twitter feed or our Mastodon feed, or I think it's even on Facebook now, you should be able to find all that information there. You still have to write him at Merrimack County for now, and then once he gets moved to a federal facility, we'll find out which one, you know, all the necessary information, and we'll publish that as well, okay?
Okay, good to know. Yeah, can you get paper mail still in New Hampshire? I know they did away with it in a lot of states and the feds.
Yes. Oh,
that's how I wrote to them.
Yes, and in fact, if you're going to write, you know, if you don't have a printer, handwriting is okay. Use only blue or black ink. No red ink, no green ink, any other color. They won't approve. Don't decorate the envelope. Like Bonnie found out. She got a letter rejected because she put a couple hearts on the back of the envelope.
Oh, my God.
And they sent it back. They're like, nope, sorry. So, like, keep the envelope
dangerous
plain.
Hearts.
You know, keep the letter to, like, actual words. You can send things like, if you want to print out a meme from the internet you think is funny, you can do that. but fold it up, you know, and put it in the envelope along with that. But don't use things like crayons to decorate any of it, or magic markers, highlighters, stuff like that. They frown upon that because, you know, over the course of time, people have figured out ways to smuggle things into prison. And so they look out for that kind of stuff, and they just say no to everything except that stuff.
Right, right. Well, I hope he's keeping his head up in there. That's rough. I was just gonna also, you've brought up so many different things tonight, which is it does feel like this country is just one fires everywhere to put out, and I honestly don't know. I don't know how it's gonna be put to rights. I don't think it can be put to rights.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well.
I always wondered, like, how did we get from things that used to be like really quality and people were proud to be American and life was affordable to this? And I learned today that stock buybacks by companies were illegal until the 1980s, and I think that might have part of it, be a small part of it. And then I was reading this old book from 1958. I got it at a flea market. It's called The Insolent Chariot by John Keats. It's about Detroit and the car industry, but it's a satire. It's really funny. But in chapter 6, he talks about the corrupt practices of all the car companies up in Detroit and how they inflated the prices over and over and over again. And it was just a really, really interesting breakdown of how these scams that companies come up with and pass those costs on to the consumer. They always say, oh, we can't pay our workers more, but they find a way to bring every nickel and dime out of every process. I'll give just one example, actually two examples. So you couldn't have a dealership. A dealership was basically a franchise, and you had to follow all the rules and regulations that the motor companies would set for you. So they would demand that you stock goods that the dealer may know they can't sell for their area. People aren't interested in slip covers or other add-ons, but they would still be mandated to stock those. And so they would just up the price, and then people would not buy the slip covers, but the cost of having to carry those was built into the car because the dealer didn't want to take a loss.
Right.
Or they would have to buy, every year they'd have to buy a huge set of tools, even if they didn't need them. Another thing was they were charging freight for a whole car, even if it was sent in pieces and assembled at the dealership. So it cost less to send parts than the whole car, but they would still charge the entire freight cost. So it was all kinds of different ways that they would nickel and dime the customer, and the price of the car should have actually been much cheaper, but this way they could write off their profits. They would also find ways to cook their own books. And dealers would testify that the way they were ordered to keep their accounting books was completely inaccurate and fraudulent, and they were losing tax write-offs in that as well, but the company would profit. It's just really wild. And this is a book from the 50s,
yeah,
late 50s.
And I know people who have been employed or even currently employed by the automotive industry, specifically dealerships. And there's a nickname that they have, Stealerships, that goes back longer than anyone can remember. You go find the oldest person working in the automotive industry at a dealership, and you go, hey, do you remember the first time you heard Stealership? They'll go, oh, I think my daddy taught me that one or whatever, right? It goes back so far that no one can remember when it started.
Yeah. So to answer the question of, like, what really screwed this all up, I mean, ultimately, it comes down, in my mind, to two things. Number one, around the turn of the century, we changed the definition of a corporation so that it used to be something that was temporary and had to be for the public good. Now you could have a for-profit corporation that only needs to make profits, and the institution of the fiat currency system. I mean, once you've got those in place, then you have captured industries like the car companies, where you have an immensely high barrier to entry, and they're supposed to be regulated by government instead of by the market. And that's the thing. All of these little tricks they apply when you're being regulated by someone who's being paid in stolen money to kind of look at it,
yeah.
instead of being regulated by, if I screw this up, my competition will knock me out of business.
Well, and Olivia, I just wanted to say that while we have been talking about a lot of topics that sound pessimistic, if you listen to the tone and the tenor and the substance of our show, we're actually all really optimistic, and we believe that there's actually a really bright future ahead of us, and that's because we've been blessed with a technology that solves the fiat problem. Like, we have technology and we have sound money that will make it so that the government can't just print things willy-nilly, mm-hmm. which has, like, if you dig into any single issue, it all goes back to the money printer. Male loneliness, money printer. Pollution, money printer. Mm-hmm. Poverty, money printer. War, money printer. Everything goes back to the central bankers, and the fact that we have technology like Bitcoin, like cryptocurrency, that makes it so that we can have a finite store of value and a finite means of exchange that can't be manipulated by any single person and can be accessed by anybody on Earth. It just solves so many of these problems. Yeah, like, we're still going to have problems, but like, the future is bright.
Yeah, all of these fires are by design. And the solution to all of them is the same. And it's, number one, get a community together.
Yeah.
Like, number two, innovate around them. Like, yeah, you're right. We can't rely on corporations. So do things like decentralized autonomous organizations that are nothing like corporations. We can't rely on the money. So make your own money. We can't rely on the legal system. So find your own way of solving disputes peacefully as a community. Like, all of these are solvable problems, but most importantly, there are people getting elected because these problems exist.
Mm-hmm. Olivia?
I have two comments on that. I think another huge problem is that drug patents, if drugs are developed with public donations, like all this breast cancer, raise money for breast cancer, raise money for heart health, if these drugs are funded with public donations, or worse, public funds, like there are government grants and government subsidies, then these should be in the public domain. You cannot, if you get your drug, which was developed in a university, which is funded by the government, if you buy that patent from a university, you should not be able to profit off that. That was paid for by the people. That is so double dipping. It makes me sick that they're profiting off of people's misery, suffering, health. Like, yeah. it's they're vultures. They're worse than vultures.
Yeah. Another money printer problem.
Well, the second thing I wanted to say was I recently did my taxes. Don't boo me, but I get a refund. Okay. And, so they garnish my wages. I'm getting my own money back. But they ask on TurboTax, and I know this is, if you go to an accountant, it's the same thing. Did you buy, sell, give away, transfer, use cryptocurrency? How would they know? Like, if it's you,
how would they know indeed?
How do they know if you have it? Like, is your name on it? Is it tied to your social security?
They just added that because what they're counting on is you to answer it for them.
Yeah, there's no way they would know unless you made it obvious.
Like, I mean,
unless you're like, hey, guys, this is my string of, like, letters and numbers that create my address. It is, like, B348625. Like, that's how they know.
Now, there are examples of people, like, there are folks who do... you know, I don't know, like the YouTube channel or whatever, who are trying to teach people about cryptocurrency, who will show off, right, and be like, here is my hardware wallet, and here is how much I have in this exchange, and here's how I go about doing trading. So they will show off some amount of cryptocurrency in order to, you know, make their living or, you know, get their point across, teach the thing that they're trying to teach. But outside of that, you know, this isn't legal advice or tax advice, but I would just not fill that out.
Well, like, for example, I guess they might be able to track certain purchases. I was looking at buying, like, a house or land in Fiji, and there are quite a few people, at least that I've seen, they're from Australia. They'll buy, like, a retirement home in Fiji and then decide they don't actually want to retire there. And they will sell for crypto. It's kind of interesting. But if you buy a house or part of an island with crypto, I mean, the government's probably going to notice.
So that's actually an interest. That's an interesting thing. Again, this isn't tax or legal advice, but there's actually what a lot of people call a loophole. I think that it's just there because it's infeasible for them to enforce it. If you buy a foreign piece of property, you don't actually have to report it as long as it's not an income generating property. So like if it's just like a vacation house that you have, it's not like you have to tell the federal government, hey, I have a vacation house in Fiji or El Salvador or whatever. But if you like have a tenant there, you know, you just have to say, oh, I get this amount of tax money from that tenant.
From rent or whatever.
Yeah, from rent. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and it's
really interesting.
Yeah, and they don't care if you spend crypto or not to do it. Like, you know, that's not something that they care about.
Yeah, it's worth going over again the difference between anonymous and pseudonymous. Mm. So if you use most cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Dash, things like that. So the trick is, can they connect this wallet to this person?
Right.
Now, if you've done something that connects this wallet to this person, like, okay, I bought this on this exchange and
Coinbase.
I sent it to this wallet.
Yeah.
Okay, then like your anonymity is gone because that pseudonymous level disappears as soon as they can connect it to that wallet. However, if you use something like Monero, then it is anonymous. So there's really no way to tell who sent what, where, when.
Somebody would have to show me how to do all this and all these things because I've tried to learn on my own and it's confusing. I'm just saying, I don't know. Maybe I can find a friend of a friend, but it's confusing. Like who? Like
I'll come up to New Hampshire. Any of us will teach you for free.
Yeah, or find one of these freedom cells, Olivia. They might be able to point you to a teacher or something along those lines. And thank you, of course, for the call. Feel free to call us again. 603-283-6160. Still to come, Zephin's sermon and the New Hampshire Duras something or another. Stay tuned. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
Telephone number 603-283-6160. If you want to join us, talk about whatever's on your mind, talk about anything we've been talking about, it's up to you. In the studio tonight, it's myself, Captain Kickass. Joining me,
Zephin.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Before we go on, though, I do want to say thank you to David Corey Eldridge. David Corey Eldridge is a silver level amplifier of Free Talk Live. What does that mean? To be an amplifier of Free Talk Live. Well, David Corey Eldridge believes that the importance of spreading the message of freedom is worth him giving $5 a month to help get this show onto more radio stations. We're currently on about 200 radio stations. We could be on 250, 300, 350 stations. Not out of the question. It's all up to you. You can visit amps.freetalklive.com. And find out more. It is a Patreon type of setup, so there are different levels. We only ask for $5. You can give more. There's different levels. There's the silver level, the gold level, the platinum, etc., and so on. And you do get little benefits for contributing, but that's not why you should contribute. If you enjoy this show, the hosts, the co-hosts, the callers, the perspective of freedom, peace, and liberty that we bring to the airwaves, please consider becoming an amplifier. Thank you again, David Corey Eldridge. We appreciate you. Amps.freetalklive.com. All right, let's go to this particular call. This is Jerome calling. Jerome, where are you calling from? I can't remember.
Charleston, South Carolina.
That's right, South Carolina.
Charleston.
South Carolina.
We've got a couple of South Carolina callers tonight.
What's on your mind, Jerome?
Hallelujah. Hey, if you married Rupert Murdoch, you could get more than $5 a month. Because I saw where he's engaged again.
Oh, you know
what?
Jerome, I forgot to say something right when you first called in. That's Trump train. Choo-choo.
Oh, dear God.
Choo-choo-choo.
All right, anyway.
All right, choo-choo. Jerome's on the Trump chain. You heard it here first,
no,
kids.
No, he's not. Nope, not going
so
to
that was
it.
An insincere toot-toot? Ah, Jerome, you're breaking my heart.
Oh, yeah, right.
I have a sincere question for you, Jerome. I understand that your dislike of Trump is quite palatable, and I also understand that South Carolina tends to vote overwhelmingly for Trump. Have you ever thought of moving to a place where you might be happier? Because since I'm libertarian and I moved to New Hampshire, I've been a lot happier being around people that are like-minded like myself.
Well, let me put it this way. I lost my mom. It's going on like 3 years now.
Mm.
And it allows me to be somewhat close to her because, the funeral and everything and where she's buried at, it allows me to, from time to time, I can go see her because that's about the only thing I really think about now. You know, living here, I grew up here. It's my hometown. It's all I really know. I lived out of places because I used to be in the military, and I was never really happy in those places for very long. But, you know, I'm kind of semi-happy here, so.
All right.
That's my main reason for living in.
All right, cool.
It's my hometown, man, you know?
Yeah. The only reason why I brought it up is because I want you to be happy, man. So if you're happy there, all the more power to you. There are things more important than politics, for sure.
If Jerome ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right?
Happy Jerome, happy life. What?
Oh, yeah. I don't think so. Anyway, he's 92 years old and he's engaged. And I saw his girlfriend. I said, she's got to be at least 40 to 50 years younger than him.
Wait, who are we talking about?
Rupert Murdoch.
Who's he? Travis Kelce? Who's he thinking? Travis Kelce? Huh? Come on.
Travis Kelce is dating Taylor Swift. Travis
Kelce,
the guy that was in the Super Bowl.
That's right, the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Chiefs player.
He's a nice guy, right?
She's only
dating him because he's a nice guy, right?
No, she's dating him because they are probably of equitable worth financially.
I don't think they'd even still be together if the Chiefs lost.
Well, some people think it was a conspiracy to get more females to watch the NFL. That the whole thing was a charade, whatever.
You know, you saying that's just wrong. Don't you believe in true love? Come on now,
love,
not for celebrities. I don't.
No.
True love.
I have never seen a case that I believed was true love in a celebrity anything. Actually,
yeah.
And Trump's in love. He's in love with his two ex-wives and his present wife.
There's one thing that Trump loves, and that looks him back in the mirror every morning. Yeah.
Trump is only in love with one thing, and that's himself.
It's true.
And that's the case with most of these people, by the way.
Biden, however, can't even talk about what love is.
Biden doesn't even have object permanence. He'll see himself in the mirror and be like, oh, why is there another one of me, Jack?
Wait a minute. Y'all lay off Joe Biden now.
No.
Why?
No.
When you talk bad about Biden, you're talking bad about me. You lay off my
No, no. You're a I'm kind, sorry. Decent person that doesn't oppress me.
You are Jerome, way cool. Wait, hang on. Jerome, you are way cooler than Joe Biden could ever even consider being, much less pull off.
Fact.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, Jerome, you complete your sentences.
Yeah. Yes.
Like all of them.
Yeah.
In other words, I complete me. Thank you.
Either that, or like whenever Jerome calls, he's got pre-scripted stuff that he's going to say, and he's standing in front of several teleprompters, right? And he's watching the words go by, and he's saying them the best that he can, but, it's the best he can.
And you can tell that behind Jerome, there is like a passion and a flair that comes from a place of sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden is literally just in it so that he can enrich himself and become a part of this Satanist child screwing and cartel. Sorry, that was hard.
Child FCCers.
Yeah, exactly.
I said it.
He tripped.
There are a bunch of child FCCers at the top of the political hierarchy.
Yes, indeed.
Sorry, go ahead, Jerome.
But I can't wait till this election get here. I got my absentee ballot. I got to mail it back to the state. Oh,
Jerome, I am in the exact opposite camp. I do not like this election. I am
do not
very
like
unhappy
it's
with it. Like, honestly, I don't think I can even bring myself to vote for Trump out of self-preservation.
This election is a frickin' rerun. How retarded are the American people that the two supposedly best candidates that anyone can present us are two senile old men.
Yeah, like, okay, so Trump is when they did the global lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So if he comes into office, what kind of terrifying authoritarianism are they going to get away with now that they have the freedom option?
Yeah.
Or, you know, nuclear war with Russia. Those are my options.
He's still proud of the vaccine,
by the
way. I'm
not
going to
vote for either of them. Yeah.
Like, he is still proud of the vaccine. Yeah. He's like, that's my technology. It's the Trump vaccine.
That's right.
Yep. I'm sure he'd rehire Fauci.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, Trump, I'm waiting to see if he gets reelected, if he's going to pardon himself. Because I was trying to look that up, trying to find out what the odds are. I couldn't find the odds, though.
He's like, oh,
but I can't wait.
Got a little bit of bad gas.
Well, the odds are 100%. So
he's 150% more likely to pardon himself than he is a non-criminal like I don't know, Ross Ulbricht,
Julian Assange.
That's a fact.
Julian Assange. Yeah, yeah. A lot of these, even
Ian Freeman.
Yep.
Did you see Pence? Pence, he's not going to support him. Now that's just wrong. That's just wrong, Mike Pence. I can't support him. Why? You were on the ticket, man. What's wrong with you?
Hey, Jerome, huh? you watch NFL, right?
Yes.
What do you think about
Football League?
Yeah, or the government football league, as it's more appropriately termed. Mm-hmm. But what do you think of RFK possibly tabbing Aaron Rodgers as his vice president?
I don't like it. I love it.
Really?
Aaron Rodgers is the vice president? Hey, who's he going to accuse of being a pedophile when he gets in office? He already tried it with Kimmel. Is he going to find somebody else to try that with? Huh?
I mean,
you
I don't
remember
know.
That?
Wait, Jerome.
Jimmy Kimmel being a pedophile?
They still have that. Field? Yeah, they have a little celebrity beef going on between Aaron Rodgers and Jimmy Kimmel. It's true.
Jerome, are you saying as a Democratic voter, you're considering voting for RFK?
Are you kidding me? He needs to be home in bed. The guy's sick. He's got some kind of disease. He needs to
Wait, you're saying that about RFK, but not about Biden? How does that make any sense?
Hey, look here. Hey, Biden's he's in a lot better place than Kennedy. You ever hear of
Trump?
Are you nuts, dude?
He's worse than Biden. Kennedy's worse than Biden. Come on.
Wow.
Kennedy can make it through sentences and upstairs.
Yeah. By himself.
He can do like 50 push-ups. He could like do more push-ups than the average 20-year-old American male.
Maybe that's how RFK and Aaron Rodgers could campaign, because, you know, Rodgers is an athlete too. I bet you they could both just go on the road, do a bunch of push-ups, and go, there, beat that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that was something that Joe Biden, we mentioned that the couple segments ago, that Joe Biden challenged a voter to push-ups. So, I mean, I'd love to see him challenge RFK to push-ups, especially now.
How
I'd like
insane
to see Trump do some push-ups. How many push-ups do you think Trump
can
do?
Oh, well, yeah, not that
probably
many.
Zero. Yeah.
Hold on. So the Kennedy is selecting a vice president that is popular? Is he trying to get killed? Like, serious question.
You can tell Aaron Rodgers is a football player by some of the comments he made, because he's an idiot. Okay? And he plays quarterback. They don't get hit as much as the lineman. He's an idiot. Okay? No wonder he's not married. What woman would want to listen to that crap 24 hours a day? He's an idiot, man.
Well, he does have a job, so 24 hours a day is a bit of a misnomer, but, you know.
And he doesn't have any children. Wink, wink. What does that mean? Uh-oh. Anyway.
What does that mean? What are you winking about?
What are you insinuating?
Yeah.
Tim Scott. Hey, anybody seen his girlfriend lately? Tim Scott?
Don't be changing the subject. Answer my question.
Yeah. What are you
insinuating about Aaron Rodgers with the wink-wink commentary?
Hey, he wouldn't be the first one hiding in the closet. Thank you.
Oh, he's gay.
Oh, you think Aaron Rodgers and RFK are secret lovers?
No, God, you're going to inspire a bunch of political fan fiction. Please don't.
Already done.
Oh, God.
The memes are hitting the internet right now.
Literotica is now, like, blossoming with new content.
Hey, don't you talk about Lindsey Graham like that.
Who?
Lindsey Graham?
Uh-oh. Yeah. All right, what else, Drew?
When does that guy get to retire?
That's about it.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call, man. Good to hear from you. 603-283-6160. It is time for the Sermon of Zephon.
Oh, yeah. So maybe to just give people a little bit of background of what it is real quick.
It's under 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, okay. It is. Every week we've been doing a sermon that's connecting why cryptocurrency and Bitcoin has a... Every week that I'm on. Why cryptocurrency and Bitcoin has a connection to a more divine piece of morality that has been either impossible to achieve before or very difficult for humans to achieve before. So without further ado, I'm just going to hop right into it.
Let's go.
Yep. In the Torah, in the chapter of Leviticus 19:36, it says, "You shall have an honest balance, honest weights, an honest unit of dry good measurement, and an honest unit of wet good measurement. I, Adonai, am your God who freed you from the land of Egypt." In ancient Israeli society, weights were used to measure goods as well as means of exchange, such as gold and silver, to facilitate trade. It was common at the time for the weights to be manipulated in order for traders to have extra money off of unsuspecting customers. This is remembered in common language today as skimming a little off the top. This commandment prohibiting this immoral behavior was listed alongside not stealing, deceiving, defrauding, and profaning the name of God. In other words, these were vital commandments in upholding and keeping civilization amongst the Israelites. As we saw when Israel abandoned God in favor of worshiping the golden calf, when the Israelites strayed away from these commandments, they put their entire societal order at risk. This applies to all of the commandments. The concept of natural law means that there are things in the universe that are inherently right and wrong. If these systems of right and wrong are not followed, the individual or society that transgresses these laws experiences immediate and or long-term punishment. Many of the commandments in the Torah, including the first one mentioned, are natural laws. If a society does not recognize the importance of using honest balances, weights, and or units of measurement that can be subject to, it could be subject to the natural consequences of natural law. These consequences include the downfall of a given society or the poverty of an individual or family who transgresses against these laws. This transgression is commonplace in our society. The skimming off the top manifests most clearly within the monetary system, where central bankers are able to determine how much a dollar is worth with the click of a button by printing more money. When the Federal Reserve prints money, it hands the extra cash over to the U.S. government and their cronies at the expense of those who use the U.S. dollar. In other words, the central bankers in the government can steal the wealth of everyday people and give it to their criminal compatriots. Inflation affects all levels of trade, stifles savings, inhibits innovation, and keeps most people poor by favoring those close to the money printer, also known as quintillionaires. However, immoral actions have consequences. This was most clearly demonstrated in the 2008 financial crisis, in which banks used money printing to prop up immoral and unsound loaning practices. These practices resulted in a catastrophic market collapse in which 2.6 million people lost their jobs and $7.4 trillion in stock wealth was lost, resulting in a devastating blow to people's life savings. However, justice came swiftly for the central bankers and their associates. Following this immoral action in 2008, Satoshi Nakamoto had the vision of creating a monetary system in which the use of honest weights was inherent within the money itself. Using open source technology and cryptography, Satoshi's vision was born in the form of Bitcoin, the first peer-to-peer electronic cash system. As a result of Satoshi's fulfilled vision, we are the luckiest generation of humanity to have ever lived. By using Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, regular people can punish the actions of central bankers. Using honest, sound, and balanced money like Bitcoin is preferable to using money that can be tipped to enrich those who control the scales. Bitcoin and cryptocurrency are the strongest tools given to humanity to enforce natural law since the Torah or other critical religious documents. Whenever the central bankers are acting degenerately by using inflation to diminish our wealth, we can seamlessly leave their system. Instead, we can enter a system based on Satoshi's vision, founded on truth, soundness, and freedom, that is distributed in a decentralized manner. However, a tool only works if you use it. Utilizing Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is imperative for harnessing the most potent instrument of natural law available to humanity. This enables us to align our lives with the moral framework of the universe. And that's it.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
Amen.
It does remind me that the only ones who got punished for the 2008 financial collapse are, well, you, me,
us.
Yep. The tax victims from the bailout.
Well, but we also were greatly and divinely rewarded.
Yeah, so, I mean, on the individual level, if you fudge your balances, you use unjust weights, yeah, you might get taken out and beaten.
Mm-hmm. Or thrown into prison.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the collective level, and again, this might take a while before you get caught, but, I mean, think of all of the fires that Olivia was describing in just every sector of our life.
Yeah.
I mean, America has been the dominant civilization on Earth, and that is ending because of how it treated that position, because it used unjust weights and measures constantly and consistently over all of this time. And when you started that, you used the phrase, "I am the Lord thy God who brought you out of Egypt."
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that doesn't necessarily translate to people is that what Egypt means in that context is
the narrows.
Slavery.
Yeah.
Slavery. Egypt is the land where you are put in bondage.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the supreme principle of life brings you out of bondage. And the supreme principle of life instructs you to be honest.
Yeah, it's as if the common person in the area called the United States of America believes that more government growth, more militarization of the police, less value of the currency, more expensive goods, more difficult time living are the way to freedom. And I'm sorry, but they're not. Mm-hmm. That's not how you get freedom. In fact, that's the road to, well, slavery.
Mm-hmm.
The more that persists, the larger the government grows, the more militarized the police get, the less value your USD dollar has going for it, the closer you get to the government making you a complete slave, overtly. Mm-hmm. You're currently a part-time slave. You're a slavery light, if you will, because... oh, yeah, you can move from state to state, or you can work overseas, but you're still getting taxed by the U.S. if you do. And, you know, all these kinds of things. But, you don't pay the man? Guess what? They're going to come after you. Sure, at first, it's just a couple of, you know, letters in the mail, right, that might be somewhat friendly written. But if you refuse, they will send men with guns to come and get you. And if you refuse, they purport the authority to end your life.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget that.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something about the weights and scales, too. Basically, that if you look at the weights and scales, they're supposed to measure a mathematical certainty in reality. Basically, that this amount of goods, it reflects this amount of value that we're transacting. So an unbalanced system is basically hijacking with the inherent order of the universe. And the thing that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency does is it uses mathematics that is inherent to the fabric of reality and creates absolute certainty in transactions, in value, and in voluntary interactions between people. That's the most beautiful part about this, honestly, is that, like, this is all voluntarily imposed, and it's perfect.
Yeah, and it's certain and the same for everyone. One Satoshi equals one Satoshi for the President of the United States or the homeless man in the gutter.
Baruch Hashem.
603-283-6160. Is currency backed by mathematics superior to that backed by something like gold or silver? What do you think? Give us a call. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Sure, it's fun when you're having flies, said one frog to the other. If you are not familiar with our program, visit freetalklive.com to find out all about us. In the studio, it's myself, the captain.
Zeffin.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Speaking of Peakless Mountaineer, since you just announced yourself, you wanted to talk about something about Honduras versus New Hampshire?
I did. So to give a little bit of background on this, we had a mutual friend who recently was pulled over and was detained because he was open carrying his firearm.
In New Hampshire?
For an hour. Here in New Hampshire.
That's odd.
Right? And this absolutely blew my mind because, like, to me, the single greatest advantage that New Hampshire has over, say, one of the free cities in Honduras.
Yeah.
Is that you can open carry
open
your
carry.
Firearm.
And you can concealed carry too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't need a permit, nothing. Just
you can open and concealed carry simultaneously, which is my preferred method.
Yeah, and there is largely an accepting culture of gun freedom.
Yes.
So when I find out that, like, the way I had first heard it is that he was arrested for it, which it turned out not to be exactly accurate.
He was put in handcuffs and detained and told he couldn't leave while he was in handcuffs. And detained.
That's basically
arrest. He wasn't put into his cell, though. Like, a lot of people, when they think of arrest, like, oh, you know, you're behind
bars,
blah, blah,
blah. You got your Miranda rights read to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You get taken downtown and chucked into the drunk tank or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But the question remains, and I know that you are as New Hampshire-pilled as it is possible to be.
Indeed.
If that right goes away completely here, as, you know, it seemed momentarily to be the case, mm-hmm. what is even the point of being here as opposed to anywhere else? Because, I mean, we're all transplants.
Yes.
So it's reasonable to expect that at least a significant portion of us would be willing to transplant again for the right incentive.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to answer your question fully, but I just wanted to preface it first with the fact that if you look up this cop, you can, by the way, I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head, but he looks like a 10-year-old.
Look on the bottom of your head.
he looks like a 10-year-old cop. Somebody found a picture of him on Facebook that showed a picture of him having a certificate that just said that his probationary period of being like a trainee state trooper was over just like a couple months ago. And there's people in New Hampshire that are friendly-ish to the state police that are free staters. And,
sure.
Yeah, and apparently this is highly, highly uncommon and highly, highly frowned upon. Like, the state police tend to be pretty good on this issue. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Benjamin Olmsted. That's the name of the
10-year-old police
of the 10-year-old
officer.
Police officer. 10-year-old
looking
right.
police officer.
Right. I mean,
who
like just
utterly violated the Constitution and the right to bear arms.
Correct. As well as New Hampshire state police norms amongst even their own crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like not a popular thing that happens here. I've been pulled over and have told cops that I'm open and concealed. concealed carrying. They don't care. They're just like, whatever, here's your license and registration back. Have a nice day. Yeah. I know Peekless has also gone through this where he's told cops he's been carrying and there's no problem. So this was really a very unusual situation. I just wanted to preface it with that, and now I'm going to answer your question. So basically, I think that the biggest value add that New Hampshire has over any place else on Earth is that we have the most robust and growing liberty community on Earth. Unlike other places in which it's spearheaded by, albeit very energetic men that like are all about like, let's get liberty happening right now. You know, let's do it in the private cities. Let's do it in El Salvador, whatever. Here we actually have people that are creating families and are creating community connections with each other that I just don't see being replicated anywhere else. So, like, I think, and you have to also keep in mind that, like, the liberty community here is very pro-natalist. So we are going to, means that you like to have kids. You're pro having kids.
Got it.
So we are going to have so many children and create such strong community bonds and connections with each other in this close geographic region that it will benefit us in the long term. Like, regardless of if there are slips or what we've been seeing, which are over time increases in liberty in the state, actually, we are going to eventually win as long as we keep our current trajectory. I think we've been pretty spoiled, actually, over the last like 4 to 8 years, where we've been getting more liberty. But I think that we're actually going to see a pushback at some point, and we should be prepared for that.
You say that we will win. What does that mean? What does the win look like? How do you know? And this is your opinion, of course.
Sure.
So, like, but like, what does it mean to win? What thresholds? What things do or don't exist anymore that like you're like, oh, we've won, we've done it.
Right. Well, I think that there's a lot of different kinds of wins. You basically have to do things day by day or year by year or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I see wins as the state getting consistently freer in the policy realm. I also see wins as people having children. I also see wins as people more and more using cryptocurrency in New Hampshire in their day-to-day lives and actually living the Bitcoin standard or the crypto standard. I see wins as, quite frankly, us breaking free from the federal government. I think that could probably happen. Mm-hmm. I see it's basically inevitable.
I would certainly celebrate that.
Yeah.
I'm an anarchist, and so like that still isn't like what I'm after.
For sure.
But man, that is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, no, but I think, what I'm trying to say is that like the problem is that this system has existed for so long that it almost has to be both an incrementalist approach and a radical approach. And we're doing both of those things simultaneously here, and it's working. And so I think that if we keep our current pace, we don't get lazy, we don't slow down, and we keep the pressure going on the continual long-term approach and the radical immediate approach, we're going to win. Fundamentally.
Okay. Well,
so you answered what the process of winning looks like
right.
to you, but you didn't really answer what it would look like to have won.
Well, okay. I actually have a good answer for that, which is I don't know. And the reason why I don't know is because we've never had a system in which the government hasn't had their boot trampling over our necks.
Mm.
And like the world that is possible with that is just beyond my imagination, because I don't have the collective imagination of 8 trillion people.
You don't?
No.
Oh.
I mean, not when I'm, I have to be on psychedelics or something, but like.
Well, I mean, so for me, what it would look like to have won at the Free State Project, number one, yes, we absolutely would have to have broken away from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And then dissolved the state government. And what I mean by dissolved is not that we end all of the necessary services, but that we finally allow competition in them.
Mm-hmm. Right. We don't base it on taxation. Right. We base the services that people want and need on their demand for said products and services, and also the mankind's ability to provide said services.
I know I would fire Trooper Olmsted in a second and then send him back to preschool.
There are so many like useless things that government does just here in New Hampshire, just even on a here in Keene on a town basis, much less on a statewide basis. Right, that you could just eliminate all these departments of redundancy departments. You know,
So. I mean, for me, it really comes down to we stop violently suppressing competition.
Yes.
Full stop. Yeah. Like, right now, if you attempt to compete with the legal system, if you attempt to compete with the monetary system, if you attempt to compete with the enforcement system, you will be violently opposed, and no one will think there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
That's what needs to... That's what needs to change for me to think we won. Now, well,
and the reason why I love New Hampshire is because I get it. Like, there are other places in the world that potentially have the ability to fight the state in a different way, right? But fundamentally, American culture is different from other cultures on the planet. And the reason why we have a lot of libertarians here is because we do have a sort of libertarian streak within our DNA, our ideological DNA as Americans. And this is why, so I want to get into immigration law, right, to help people that are in other countries move to New Hampshire for more liberty. If you talk to them and you ask them what their inspirations were, a lot of it comes from like a lot of American conceptions of liberty and freedom, and like, oh, I was inspired by Ron Paul, I was inspired by all these different things.
Right.
Huh. And so like, and they're wanting to come to New Hampshire, right? They're not wanting to move to Honduras. They're not wanting to move to El Salvador. There are some that are like that, but like the fact is that we have that culture
I'm
here.
I'm not talking about El Salvador
at
all.
No, I get it. Yeah.
The moment that El Salvador...
Or Argentina, I don't care.
The moment that El Salvador or Argentina gets a free city, I will start talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, there exist these places that, as far as I can tell, like there's this... minimal amount of obedience that is necessary, a tiny little fee, and then you just get left alone completely. There's no IRS asking you to document every last little cent that you do for anybody ever.
Yeah.
There's not a regulation for every single part of your existence.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right that the liberty is part of the culture, but how did it get that way? Well, it got that way through a sustained period of high liberty.
Yes.
So if you have these little pockets where liberty, real liberty, is being experienced, that's how we got the good stuff.
Yeah.
So you have this possibility where, like, it seems to me that the people that go there, even if they didn't start out libertarian, they become libertarian just from experiencing it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of want to draw off of a point that the captain actually does pretty frequently, which is that, like, we, at this point in time, technology has gotten to the point, and the ability for humans to move has gotten to the point that if any of us wanted to be free and just, like, go under the radar, we totally could just, like, disappear in one of these countries in some far-off land and, like, live in that way. There might be some,
living
like,
that gray
risks.
Life.
Yeah, there might be some, like, little risks affiliated with that, whatever. But, like, I think that the thing that's really important is that, like, we need to fight for a vision in which everybody can be free.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think that the way that we do that is not by doing the Libertarian Party version of that, which is, let's get a Libertarian president elected. I think we have to lead by example.
Yeah.
And we lead by example by getting together, working together, building community, having kids, like, and creating these self-sustaining things. And
I completely agree with 100% of that.
Yeah.
The question is, why here? I mean, we are in the backyard of the most powerful empire ever to exist.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, it goes back to America, right? Like, so some of this is like a, I don't know, I feel like I'm sort of exuding like a spiritual reason behind it. But like, I think that there's a big practical reason to it as well, which is just that like, try to convince your spouse, if you have a libertarian spouse, let's move to a different country, honey. As an American, like, used to your American way of life, going to Walmart, things like that, like, it's probably not going to go over well. I think that, like, this sort of idea of, like, if you're an American, let's move to a different country is something that appeals very much to the American male psyche. I'll admit, it appeals to me a little bit. But, like there, I think that there just isn't a way that we can scale this and build a community in a way that we will have women present. And we cannot underestimate the importance of that, because libertarians are some male mother efforts, you know what I mean? But
more
New Hampshire...
More dudes than chicks, that's true.
Yeah, but New Hampshire... I think has a like more of a decent male to female ratio than like general libertarianism. Well, so
like there's no other country, right? I don't want to say government, because like I'm trying to make a differentiation between like the people of the United States of America versus the government of the United States of America. Right. But I have never heard of another country advertising themselves or billing themselves, if you will, as the land of the free, right? Like other people from other countries, and you know, we've talked about immigration a little bit and relocating here. Why do people move here, right? Well, I don't see people who want more freedom moving to other places. I see them continuing to move here. They're continuing to cross the United States borders, right, and come here on hope and a dream that they're going to be able to be more free here than they are wherever they're leaving from, the oppression that they're leaving to get here.
And but then there is are people that just PR?
Well,
because, man, I got to tell you, the federal government is up everyone's bum right here.
Oh, it certainly is. And, in fact, Mr. Senile Kid Sniffer Biden recently said again that domestic terrorism is the number one terrorist threat to the United States of America. What does that mean?
MAGA Republicans.
That means us. Right, yep. People who do shows like this, people who call into this show, listen to this show, people who, you know, listen to other sorts of media that like are freedom oriented, right? That's what the establishment is worried about. It's worried about the mass of people taking their freedom back from the oppressive institution that has become the largest empire.
And where are they concerned about that, right? Like, I don't think that there's really anywhere else on Earth that is as much of a threat to the globalist order as people that just happen to reside in the United States. Like, personally, maybe there's like Bukele, maybe there's Malay or something. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of the individuals, Tucker Carlson, you know, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, everyone in this room, everyone in New Hampshire.
Everybody like, at Liberty Forum.
Right, everyone at Liberty Forum. Like, all of these people are in this geographic area known as the United States.
Yep.
And a lot of the really badass ones are in New Hampshire specifically. And I don't know, I can't discount that. It's sort of like Bitcoin, right? Like, you can argue until you're blue in the face that Bitcoin has all of these inferior problems and all of that, but it has the network. And that's where its strength lies, is within this network. And I think the same thing is the case with New Hampshire. It has a strong, solid libertarian network. I don't know anywhere else it's called the libertarian homeland, you know. And I think that's where its value lies. Like, libertarianism is still decentralized. We'll never get all libertarians here. And quite frankly, I don't want them all here. But libertarians are so hard to get anywhere that the fact that we can get them here with a lot less stress than, oh, let's get them to Honduras. Let's get them here. Let's get them there. Like, I think that that is important.
Well, so to address your arguments, Captain, first, there are other countries that claim to be free places. I mean, France is liberty, equality, fraternity.
Yep.
The very first part of that is liberty. So they are absolutely claiming that they are liberty. Are they? Not remotely.
Yeah. They're the ones who gave us a statue, though. So
they are. Sure are. And they are every bit as corrupt and wretched as the maniacs, right,
so
in Washington.
Not France. Okay, go on.
Yeah, so I mean I can look it up
France
if you want, but
shortlist.
Like, this is a claim that's, I mean, the People's Republic of anywhere is a frequent claim.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there's definitely places that claim to be free other than America.
Yeah.
There's, and for that matter, there are other places that people go to be more free. You know, Liechtenstein or Thailand or Singapore.
Yeah,
or,
I made no secret about it before I moved here. I had a list of places that I was considering, and some of those were on it. Vietnam, Chile, right? There are places on that list that I want to go. Heck, even Ireland to a large extent, depending on what category you're looking at, can be considered more free than most states in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, New Hampshire was chosen by the Free State Project themselves. Now, I'm not a part of that. I didn't join. I didn't sign, whatever. I like the idea, right? But they doubled down. So if the U.S. was self-billing as the land of the free, New Hampshire doubles down on that with live free or die.
Mm.
Libertarian homeland.
Right. Now, New Hampshire has never really called itself the libertarian homeland. That's something the people who've moved here, have migrated here, yeah, have adopted.
Well, but all you have to do is ask the average normie, oh, what do you like about living here? Oh, I like the weather. I like the seasons. And boy, do I love live free or die. Death is not the worst of evils.
Yeah. It's
average citizen.
Yeah. It is amazing how libertarian New Hampshire, the state, is compared to the rest of the other states, even before the Free State Project existed.
Yep.
Yeah, that I would absolutely say is that if my choices are the 50 states, this is number one, no question. And, like, I guess maybe Florida would be number two, probably.
Yeah, it's number two.
Well, if you complain about open carry,
yeah,
they don't even let you open carry there.
Yeah, like I said, there's, I have to think about it, but, like,
South Dakota, maybe? I don't know.
So, I mean, the analogy to Bitcoin, I think, is kind of crucial as well, that, like, as we pointed out, Bitcoin has had more attacks than anything else, and it has withstood them and grown stronger because it's an anti-fragile system.
Yep.
However, what if you just had a way to not have that kind of attack?
So, well, then, like, you wouldn't get anything
so,
done.
I mean, like,
that's what I said earlier.
If you're sitting directly under the eye of Sauron, you are going to have more attacks.
Well, yes.
But
if you want to destroy...
There's a reason we didn't do the Free State Project in D.C., for example.
Well, but if you want to destroy the ring, you have to get close to the Eye of Sauron.
So we should have done the Free State Project in the District of Columbia.
No.
You don't.
Why not?
Because you don't do. You don't throw the ring into the Eye of Sauron. You throw it into the thing that is in close proximity to Sauron, because Sauron cares about this place,
and
which is
power,
why he set up the tower there in the first place.
And the power of the American federal government was forged where? In liberty. It was forged in the most free place on Earth. And is this really that? Is New Hampshire the freest place on Earth right now?
It depends on what you're looking
for. I already established, at least, that the thing that matters to me is not where I could conceptually be the freest. I've already agreed with you that if I don't care about you, I could just live wherever the heck I want and live way freer than I can now.
Right.
What I am doing is I'm fighting the Empire. I'm fighting evil, and I've been able to become...
Ah, but you never get anything done by fighting the existing order. You
no,
get things
well, we're
done
building.
By building
no,
something
I,
different.
I totally agree. And I've been able to build things, and I've been able to build my knowledge, and I've been able to build my confidence by being in this network. I was not this strong before I moved here, and I'm not the only one that's made stronger from this network.
Yeah.
I am one data point among many.
Right. One of the underrated things to build is community.
Yeah.
Right. And that is something that is being done here. And, like, to such an extent that things like Liberty Forum going on right now, or Porkfest and Forkfest going on, are not only serve as, like, you know, educational hubs for people who want to come to New Hampshire, figure out what it's all about, spend some time, meet some people, all that kind of thing. It also serves as a family reunion of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are many people who have come through New Hampshire, either to and lived here for a while, or they visit frequently enough. They are of liberty-minded, disposition,
mm-hmm.
That they come through and they're like, yeah, I've been over here and I've done that. And, like, we get to learn from their escapades around the globe. So this freedom movement isn't just New Hampshire.
Nope.
But New Hampshire is certainly the headquarters for it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I will absolutely say that having been here, I have learned a tremendous amount. And that is really the big trade-off that I see there is that, like, yeah, on the one hand, you might experience more freedom and get to, like, watch a building burgeoning from ordinary to free, but you don't have the expertise that you have here.
We are out of time. Thank you to all of our listeners, our callers. Thank you, Zephan, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
For your contributions. If you missed any part of tonight's program, please visit freetalklive.com. Under the resources tab, you'll find the archives. Thanks and peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.